It's still Thursday night in Alaska, where later today, 3 years after invading and starting a war with his neighbours and being frozen out by most of the Western world, Russian leader Vladimir Putin will be welcomed with no preconditions by US leader Donald Trump to a state once sold by a Russian czar to America in the 19th century. Ukraine is not represented and will be watching nervously to see what, if anything, is agreed, particularly after Donald Trump talked last week of discussing a land swap. Speaking to reporters in the White House yesterday, he said European leaders may be invited to a second summit.
We have a meeting with President Putin tomorrow. I think it's going to be a good meeting, but the more important meeting will be the second meeting that we're having. We're going to have a meeting with President Putin, President Zelensky, myself, and maybe we'll bring some of the European leaders along, maybe not. It's I don't know that it's going to be very important. We're going to see what happens. And I think President Putin will make peace. I think President Zelensky will make peace. We'll see if they can get along. And if they can, it'll be great. It never made sense, this war. It would have never happened when I was president.
James Waterhouse is with us. He's BBC News Ukraine correspondent. Morning again, James.
Good morning.
Talk to us more about the context of inviting Vladimir Putin to Alaska with no preconditions after 3 years of war.
It's very difficult to try and control your expectations on such a meeting, which is significant in the sense that there's the Kremlin coming in from the American cult. They will sit down with Trump and Putin for the first time in 6 years, and the subject of what they will discuss will define the very future of a country. So it's a big deal in that sense. But you're right, we don't really know what is going to go down. I mean, I was reading the Kremlin readout of how they saw the itinerary, and they were talking about how both presidents would have a tête-à-tête for a few hours before being flanked by their senior officials, where they would thrash out negotiations to try and set a course for ending this war. And then there is a joint press conference, and I'm really struggling to imagine Donald Trump being frustrated with Vladimir Putin on one hand, if he does refuse to stop the fighting, but on the other hand saying, but we have plans to deepen our economic cooperation, for example. It's very hard to see the American president bringing out the stick that his European friends and Ukraine wanted to force Vladimir Putin to stop his war.
Kremlin have released an agenda, but is it in any way clear, at least from what he said so far, what Donald Trump wants from this meeting?
I think we just know, if we keep this in broad strokes, which I think is helpful given the unpredictability around his decision-making, we know that he wants peace and he's impatient to get there. He wants to credit for ending this war. And then, of course, in this part of the world, it's about the terms of that peace. So what's he going to do? Is he going to say to Vladimir Putin, you need to stop now, otherwise I am going to follow through with heightened tariffs for your trading partners like India. China will follow. There will be further sanctions for you as well. I want to drive down the price of oil. Or will he say, we'll give Ukraine everything it needs militarily to defend itself and make life as difficult as possible for your troops? I mean, he has a huge array in his pocket to leverage in that sense. And this is a high-stakes meeting for Vladimir Putin. You know, the budget deficit is only increasing in Russia. He won't be able to mask the loss of life his war is causing forever. But if the Russian leader has a chance of improving relations with America directly, whilst taking a net gain from his invasion of Ukraine, then that just might be something to agree to. And it's any kind of agreement or pledge that comes out of this meeting that will be very difficult for Zelensky and any European leaders, if they're invited, to try and counter in any subsequent meeting.
Is it hard to escape the conclusion that the very nature of this meeting is a win for Russia?
I'm struggling to away from that view, because Russia has been trying to drive a wedge between Europe and America. Russia has resented what it sees as a unipolar world with America ruling the roost, and it's wanted to expand its own area of influence by essentially invading and making a land grab in Eastern Europe. So this is a dream for the Kremlin to have such to be able to negotiate correctly. And Vladimir Putin is a master of persuasion. You know, he is used to projecting his country's interests and trying to further him in these kind of gated negotiations. And if you look at Donald Trump's team, you know, it's not blessed with a huge amount of foreign policy experience, not least with Steve Witkoff, his senior aide and golfing buddy of Donald Trump. His expertise lies in real estate. So we see what comes out. The White House says it is a listening exercise. I'll know very quickly if he's serious. He won't mess with it. He wants to take the whole of Ukraine, but I'm the president. He won't be around. But we know, don't we, that Trump will sort of adopt a spine when it comes to foreign policy, absorb what it's listening, and it may well shape its immediate decision after that.
With apologies for some of the quality of the audio line, there is some interruptions. We'll continue for the moment. If anything is announced or agreed that Ukraine don't agree to, James, what then?
Well, Ukraine will keep fighting. I mean, there is no way you will it's just simply hand over land if there was any such kind of agreement hammered out in Alaska, such as the existential nature of this war. And it's the kind of implementation of any ceasefire that where Ukraine does have some leverage, because it'll be Ukraine that has to honour it, and it's Ukraine and Ukraine alone that has always been doing the fighting. But beyond that, if they incur Donald Trump's wrath for not following the statement of intent, is one, then of course he can leverage through through withholding military aid or financial support and making life difficult for Ukraine and its European neighbours. And we just don't know which way it could go. You know, he criticised Zelensky for saying, oh, I need to consult the Constitution. You know, he's done a lot of things. And, you know, we are still talking about a country being invaded and a Ukrainian president bound by the laws of his land. So it's concerning for Kyiv the way Donald Trump can pivot on the tone he takes with the country he's supposed to be backing.
James, thanks for speaking to us again. That's James Waterhouse, BBC News Ukraine correspondent. We'll cross live to Alaska in the second hour of the programme, coming up to 27 minutes past 7. Morning, Ireland, 13 minutes past 8. After almost 1,300 days of war on Ukraine, the man who led an invasion of his neighbours and the capture of much of Ukraine will be welcomed to a meeting with no preconditions to a part of the United States that used to be part of the Russian Empire by an American president who once claimed to be stablemates with the ex-KGB spy. Let's cross live to Anchorage, Alaska, where it's still Thursday. Philip Crowther is there. He's international affiliate correspondent with Associated Press. Philip, good morning or good night there. Thanks for taking our call today.
Hello, it's a pleasure.
Where exactly is this meeting taking place?
Well, it's happening at an Air Force base. It's called the Air Force Base of Elmendorf. It's just on the outskirts of Anchorage. Both presidents, we expect them to land at that military base on U.S. soil, but there will be no contact with the people of Alaska, no chance for any demonstrators to get close. They're both just going to land there, have their meetings with their delegations, and then, according to the Russian side at least, a joint press conference, which hasn't been confirmed by the White House so far. And then, in theory, they both jet off again in their respective directions. One thing worth mentioning is that Donald Trump only around 24 hours ago said that he would be willing to stay longer. It's not clear for what. He indicated possibly to invite Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky to further talks, but that is, of course, very unrealistic that that could happen over the next few days here. But the overall goal might be to get all three people to the negotiating table as quickly as possible, and that might happen here in Alaska again.
What sort of clearance did Vladimir Putin have to get to come to Alaska?
Yeah, he needed an extra agreement from the U.S. Treasury, in fact, to be able to land at this Air Force base here. But nothing else really stops him from coming here. There is an arrest warrant, of course, from the International Criminal Court, but the U.S. never signed up for it, meaning that they have no obligation to arrest Vladimir Putin, the Russian president, once on U.S. soil. So really all it needed was the agreement from a U.S. president, so the invitation from a U.S. president to not just come to U.S. soil, but land on a U.S. military base, admittedly one that is almost as close as it possibly can get to Russian soil. Anchorage is a long way from the border with Russia, the sea border, I should mention, but it is only 5 kilometers between the two countries at their nearest point.
There will be translators at the meeting, but Putin can speak English. Trump doesn't have any Russian. That does give the Russian president an advantage, another one, arguably.
Yeah, it's fair to say there are plenty of advantages here for Vladimir Putin. Of course, he's known his way around these diplomatic circles for much longer than Donald Trump has, despite the fact that the US president believes that he is the ultimate deal maker. But you're right to mention the translators, because they will be privy to some discussions that no one else will, the same as was the case for the last time they had a longer meeting. Remember, that was in Helsinki in Finland in 2018. Only translators were present then, and any notes that were taken, well, they were quickly discarded. This time around as well, according at least to Moscow, again, Washington hasn't said much about what exactly is going to happen here in Anchorage. According to Moscow, there is going to be a face-to-face meeting with translators present, then another meeting with the whole delegations present, and then a joint press conference. But those are just the outlines of what might happen here in Anchorage. We don't exactly know how long these meetings might happen, what order they might take, and of course, what kind of an outcome there might be.
Yes, because the news conference, assuming there is one, and Trump has form here, is where anything could happen.
Yeah, absolutely. And you can only really see a press conference, a joint press conference that is happening, if they agree to something, if they believe they have something to present to the public. If the meeting went well, then you can see them standing side by side. You're right to mention this. Many people might remember the last time there was a joint press conference between these two. That was in 2018, when Donald Trump seemed to side more with the Russian president, Vladimir Putin, about his country's involvement or not in the US election. He said that he had no reason not to believe Vladimir Putin, that Russia was not involved, and thereby siding with him rather than with the United States' own intelligence agencies. So yes, there is form there. And if we are to see a joint press conference between Putin and Trump, that is something you won't want to miss.
Philip, thanks for speaking to us. That's Philip Crowther, international affiliate correspondent with Associated Press, speaking to us live from Anchorage in Alaska. 18 minutes past 8.